I'm William O'Flaherty. Welcome to All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. On the show today, I'm featuring the final group of reflections to honor the life and legacy of Walter Hooper, who died December 7th, 2020. While this is technically the second podcast for me on the topic, it is the fifth in a series of crossover shows, as the podcast Pints with Jack and the Lamppost Listener also had programs with reflections from others who knew Walter. Because several other shows provided a concise overview of Walter Hooper's life, there will not be another one here. Be sure to follow the links in the show notes to listen to other reflections, noting my first show and the first one from Pints with Jack had overviews, as well as the episode that the Lamppost Listener did. I hope you enjoy these and the other shows from a variety of individuals who were familiar with Walter. Despite the total of over 4 hours of reflections between all shows, I know there are others who knew him that were not recorded. My apologies to those who were not included. Please feel free to leave a comment on this or any of the other shows to share your thoughts about the life and work of Walter Hooper. First up is Launcia E. Smith, founder and executive director of Cultivating and the Cultivating Project. Online, you can find her at thecultivatingproject.com.
My memories of Walter are very sweet. I've been really blessed to have known Walter since 2005. I met Walter for the first time at the Kilns, which is, of course, the most appropriate, I think, environment to meet him at. And it was at an event that was put on by the C.S. Lewis Foundation, and it was such a magnificent gift. That whole evening was just really remarkable. I have said to a friend earlier this week when we were talking about Walter that C.S. Lewis has played a phenomenally important role in my own formation, but I would never characterize him as my hero. Walter, on the other hand, always was my hero. I barely knew much about Lewis except through the original works that I read of, you know, Walter writing about him, both through biography and, you know, through different books and pieces that were put together that he edited. A lot, though, of what I loved related to Walter and his work that way was actually his own writing. It's the forewords that he wrote so generously for so many people and the works that they did. And I loved the finesse of his, you know, his word craft. It was something exceptionally fine, and it was strong and very clear, just beautifully worded, beautifully articulated. And so many of the books that I've read about Lewis, a very big portion of what I loved about the books was actually Walter's voice in that foreword, you know, or in the books where, you know, he edited multiple pieces of content. And I know that, you know, I've read all the biographies, I think, on Lewis, and I have to say I still love his and Roger Lancelin Green's biography and have an enormous preference for it. And part of it is because it was based on firsthand meeting, and that means something. So I loved that. And I think about the way that Walter was so notorious in the way that he would give his very serene Walter face, but it was not a very revealing face when people asked if they could have a picture with him. So it's so rare as you go through the archives of pictures of Walter Hooper to find anything where he's actually smiling. And the success rate, you know, was probably 1 in 500 where you could actually get a smile from Walter, or even much of a candid kind of expression. And, you know, part of that I used to think was because he was being so reserved that he just didn't want to put himself forward. But I also realized that as I grew older and watched that over a longer period of time, that probably reflected more of Walter's tremendous discipline in being careful about how he curated his presence as a public figure guarding not only C.S. Lewis's legacy, but the actual work spiritually that that represents. And, you know, Walter was a consummate curator in the very best sense of that, of what it means to develop a collection to display its deepest qualities of value and beauty. And then, you know, another term for curator is a curate, to tend the well-being of people's souls. And I think that that, I just saw that always permeating everything that Walter did. He was legendarily kind, and he was kind to people who probably didn't expect it. I would, you know, put myself in that category. He didn't stand to gain anything, particularly, you know, from being kind to me. I didn't represent, you know, any particular, you know, value point in academia or the publishing world in terms of points of power, anything that might be gained from that. He just was very systematic in the way that he treated people. And all of the people I've ever talked with have said the same thing. Please describe Walter Hooper. And virtually the first thing out of their mouth was that he was unfailingly kind. I certainly found that to be true. I also found him to be remarkably funny, and funny in ways that sometimes were so refined it went over my head. But there was a certain kind of merriment in Walter's eyes. And I felt like even if he was laughing at what I didn't understand, I never felt like he was laughing at me. He was, you know, laughing with some secret, beautiful merriment. And I asked him years ago, and he answered the way he answered, I think, a number of different people when I asked him about the issue of serving his whole life in the shadow of another man's reputation. And Walter, you know, was very systematic, and he said that he was glad and grateful to do that, that he would do it all over again if he could, and that he'd been serving in a bright shadow. The first time I heard Walter say that, I thought he was, of course, making the reference, you know, to somebody who has been holy and good. And it really took me several years to realize that he was making a reference to something far deeper than that. And it was actually Lewis's reference to his experience with Phantastes and the experience of what it means to encounter holiness as it begins to permeate and wash into one's life. You know, when Lewis said that he saw the bright shadow coming out of the book, Phantastes, into the real world and resting there, transforming all common things, and yet itself unchanged. Or more accurately, I saw the common things drawn into the bright shadow. That quote really lingered with me, and the only reason I have it sitting there right on the, more or less on the tip of my tongue, is because I'm in the middle of writing a piece related to that and to Walter. So it's fresh in my thinking. But I realized, you know, with Walter, that that effect of serving in a bright shadow for him wasn't really strictly the sacrifice of serving another man's name and his legacy. It was serving the same thing that other man had loved and served himself. And so in some respects, while I see the element of sacrificial service in that, I also see the joyful part of it as well. And just think how blessed, how merciful the Lord has been in the way that he gave us Walter, who seemed to be the embodiment of so many characteristics we think of attached to Lewis also. And yet he was himself and he was his own man. And I always think of Walter associated with deep scarlet red and with sage green, because his sitting room in his flat in Oxford was painted the deepest, most luscious, gorgeous shade of scarlet red. And I often saw him wearing a red sweater with his sage green jacket or a very jaunty, scarlet scarf. And I think, you know, in some ways he even wore the colors of Christmas. So I was happy for Walter that he would go during Advent and that he would meet the Lord that he loved and served all of his life and experience that reunion. I was talking with Malcolm Guite earlier, and he said that C.S. Lewis had used an expression I had not heard before. And he's, because we're talking about, it wasn't COVID that took Walter. Walter was ready to go. He was 89 and frail and had already suffered some pretty serious physical illnesses over the years. And Malcolm's comment was that Walter was ripe for dismissal. And there was such a beauty and truth to that, about what it means to be ripe, full of maturity and readiness to be completed. He was ready to be dismissed from earthly responsibilities and to go home and to receive his reward. I'm grateful to have been able to bear witness to any of that, you know, and to share, you know, the love of Walter with other friends. Not everybody, you know, gets to have that about somebody that is like Walter. So we're a very rich circle of friends to share that affection. And I'm very grateful.
Andrew Lazo from Northwind Seminary, co-editor of Mere Christians, Inspiring Encounters with C.S. Lewis. Previously, he gave a summary of Hooper's life on the Lamppost Listener podcast.
I had the chance on a number of occasions to meet and spend time with and correspond with Walter Hooper before his passing this last December. And I could fill up an hour easily of reminiscences about him, but a few principles stand out, and I want to share those today. In the audio recordings that were the first draft of The Four Loves, C.S. Lewis says that love is where we go out of ourselves to meet another, out of ourselves toward another. This fundamental turning from self and turning towards another, I think, is Lewis's fundamental definition of love, and that's certainly how you can define the life of Walter Hooper. He was a selfless man. As I've paid attention over the days and weeks since his passing, I've noticed so many people telling stories about Walter having plenty of time to answer their questions. How many forewords did he write for so many of us? How many emails did he answer? This kind of welcome is what Diana Glier, in her talk in Oxbridge 2017, called intellectual hospitality. You should look up that talk on YouTube. And this intellectual hospitality, this making space for others, is what Walter embodied brilliantly. I usually had to send two emails to get one in return, and I tried always to ask a question so that he would be intrigued and would answer. And I have a number of emails from him, and he was always so gracious in his answer and acted as if he was doing me the favor. Whenever we spent time together, that was also the case. When I met him first and took him out to dinner, as I've mentioned in Lancia Smith's wonderful Cultivating online magazine, he reminded me for years of that tiny generosity when it was actually he who had been so generous with me. So welcoming. And that reminds me of what I've heard of personal stories of C.S. Lewis, how welcoming he was to so many cats and dogs, and he knew no enemies unless they declared themselves against him. And even then, I think Lewis probably dealt with such people with a twinkle in his eye. And that twinkle was certainly there with Walter. I remember one time that I was over to his flat on Woodstock Close for tea. And he had been ill the year before. This was 2014. I had seen him in 2015 during the laying of the memorial stone, and he was not in best form. But by the time we visited in the summer of 2014 during the C.S. Lewis Foundation's Oxbridge Conference Summer Institute, Walter was back on the top of his game. So there he was in the kitchen making us tea, and he said to his lovely cat, the Blessed Lucy of Narnia, who always favored me and jumped up on my lap whenever I was there. She was attending to Walter in the kitchen as he was preparing the tea, and Walter said, "Blessed Lucy, go into the other room and spend some time with your Uncle Andrew." And it wasn't lost on him that I shared the same name with one of the worst characters in the Chronicles of Narnia. That twinkle, that delight in his eye, that smile. You don't see that smile much when he posed for pictures, but you saw it all the time when he talked with you, especially if you proved a lively conversationalist. But he was so generous as to draw everyone. And from what I've read, that's what Lewis did as well. Walter brought the tea out from the kitchen and had gotten these lovely little biscuits, and they were called nice biscuits. And then he proceeded to say, "Andrew, do you notice that these biscuits are very nice?" Of course, alluding to that horrible organization, the National Institute for Coordinated Experiments, in that hideous strength. "Andrew, they're very nice. In fact, I believe that Captain Hardcastle has baked these for you. She's very interested in you. In fact, I think she likes you for your head." And so there he was making jokes. And clever, witty, but generous jokes. And the tea sometimes switched to wine, and the time never ran out. Walter never had had too little time. Well, I take that back. During 2014, he was so busy with the memorial stone and all of the accompanying ceremonies, I frankly expected him to have no time to spend with me at all. And he said, "Well, I can meet you for church, if you wouldn't mind coming to the oratory, the Uxford Oratory, St. Aloysius." And so we went to Latin High Mass, and I had brought them then my copy of The Collected Letters, Volume 3, which is now so hard to find. And I asked Walter to sign it for me, and he signed it, and this is my most favorite inscription. He said, "To Andrew Lazo, from his friend Walter Hooper." I think our Lord came to not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as ransom for many. And Lewis, once he came to our Lord, also served many. And Walter Hooper took up that banner very well. He was generous. He was hospitable. And the heart of generous hospitality is love, because that's how God treats us. And that's how Walter treated me and so many others. I will miss him very deeply, and miss not getting emails back from him and visiting him in his home. But his example lives on, and I will try to take up that banner of generous hospitality, what my bishop calls pastoral curiosity, time and space for others, and certainly time to give. And that's what Walter did for me.
Next up are two individuals who co-authored a couple of books on Lewis. The first is entitled The Surprising Imagination of C.S. Lewis, and the second is The Neglected C.S. Lewis. They are Dr. Jerry Root and Mark Neal. I recorded them together. Jerry Root from Wheaton College is also known for co-editing The Quotable Lewis.
Mark, I was intrigued years ago when I read your interview with Walter Hooper. And it was very well written, and I think it was illuminating about the man. How did that article come to be?
I was friends with Chris Mitchell, who was then the director of the Wade Center, And I had had him as a professor at Wheaton College. We had become friends and stayed in touch. In fact, we met regularly. We read books together and discussed them. He was sort of a mentor figure for me. So I had a connection to the Wade, and I had a good connection to Chris. And I just kind of said, hey, Chris, would it be possible for me to do an interview with Walter Hooper? And I think he was in town at that point to receive the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Wade Center. So it kind of just worked out that I was able to do that. But interestingly enough, that was the first time I had met Walter Hooper. And that interview took place in 2009. It was subsequently published in Sainsuit, the journal. But I then had the opportunity to meet him a few other times. I took a trip to Oxford, actually, at the same time Chris Mitchell was there doing some lecturing at the Kilns. So he and I were able to spend some time together in Oxford. And one of the things that we ended up doing was having dinner at Walter Hooper's place, which was an interesting experience. You know, he every time Chris Mitchell went to Oxford and hung out with Walter Hooper, he always made Brunswick stew for Chris Mitchell. And I guess the thing, they couldn't get lima beans or something over there, so Chris would bring lima beans and they'd make Brunswick stew. And so I had Brunswick stew. And just the experience of being there in Walter's home, and I got a chance to look at the famous diary, which, you know, at the time actually that I interviewed him, which was I think a few years before I went there to Oxford, had run up to about 26 volumes, and these you know are just Walter's sort of daily reflections on things, and but also just kind of fun to kick back there, have discussion. And you know, Walter ended up giving me a little glass, and you know, he's very free with the cocktails and so forth. And so, you know, conversation was flourishing and so forth. But he ended up telling me the story of this glass that I was holding in my hand. And I guess Hooper who had known, you know, many of the Inklings, including Tolkien, was at some event where Tolkien was giving a lecture or so forth. And he was waiting for him outside, and Tolkien came out with a glass, and he's like, you know, I forgot something inside. Can you hold this for me? Well, Hooper ended up keeping this glass. And so, you know, very strangely, I ended up drinking, I think it was brandy or something from the same glass that Tolkien drank from, which is really very silly, but kind of just a fun reflection. I met Hooper a few other times as well. Actually, he and I corresponded a number of times via email. I ran into him another time when I was in Oxford, just kind of randomly at the Trout pub. I was there with my wife. I was doing some teaching, and we happened to have dinner there one night, and lo and behold, there was Walter Hooper, so I got to catch up with him there. But just giving some sort of general impressions of Walter, I didn't know him well, but I would say he was a humble, a kind, a gentle man. And certainly our indebtedness to the colossal work he's done to promote and make available the works of C.S. Lewis, I mean, just can't be bettered. So in the interview that I did with him, there was an interesting statement he made, and I'm just going to briefly read it. I had asked him, do you think that any of your friendships with any of the Inklings influenced the direction your life would ultimately take? And he said, yes, of course, and went on to kind of explain that Lewis wanted him to get to know all the Inklings, and he wanted the Inklings to get to know Hooper. And he was talking to his friend, Kim Gelnett, and Kim is, I think, responsible for the restoration of the Kilns in Oxford. And he said to Kim, you know, I think really I'm an old man now. And increasingly when I look at myself and write about myself, I call myself an old fool because that's what it seems to me I've become. And then Walter said, but when I mentioned this to Kim, he said, oh, you can't say that. You can't say that because don't you know when in George Sayer's biography of Lewis, he speaks of the summer of 1963 and says, he saw Lewis in the hospital, and Lewis said, have you met Walter Hooper, my new secretary? I want you to like him. He's almost too anxious to please, but no fool. No. And I think that I can say unequivocally with Lewis that the work of these last many years has shown that Walter Hooper was certainly no fool.
That's excellent.
But Jerry, you certainly have had a long, long relationship with Walter Hooper, probably longer than many people. So give us some highlights, some anecdotes, some great stories you've had from your time with him.
I first encountered his name in 1970. I was just starting to read C.S. Lewis's works. I was in college, and I'd picked up a copy of God in the Dock, and he edited that book. But in his preface, I was intrigued by a few things that he said. One, that he thought Lewis was the most thoroughly converted man I ever met. I thought, wow, for a person to make a claim like that, he must have known him fairly well. And so I was interested. There were some other things about that preface I'll talk about in a moment that also are intriguing, especially at this time as we think of Walter's passing. But in 1975, the Watergate conspirator, Nixon White House staffer, Charles Colson, came to Christ by reading Mere Christianity. I clipped that article from the paper. It was the first time I'd seen anything about it. And I sent it to Walter Hooper. It was the first time we corresponded. And he wrote back a lengthy letter, and we had some correspondence after that. And it wasn't until 1977 that Claudia and I went over to England, and while we were in Oxford, we went to meet him at St. Mary Magg's, where he was the curate at that time. And we went down to the Lamb and the Flag for a cider and a beer, and we visited. That was the first time I'd ever met him. He said, why don't you come back tomorrow? So the next day we went back and we met at the Eagle and Child. And that started our friendship face to face. Fast forward several years later, not that many years later, actually. They came out with this movie documentary called Through Joy and Beyond, where Walter Hooper narrates C.S. Lewis's life. And it was filmed by Lord and King Productions. Bob O'Donnell was the producer and director. And when it did this nationwide tour, 10 cities it went to, when it came to Los Angeles, where I was living at the time, I had gotten in touch with Bob O'Donnell, and he asked if I would drive Hooper around for the time he was in L.A. So we drove to this interview that he was to have with a L.A. Times religion editor named John Dart. Well, by that time, this controversy was starting to emerge because there was a woman named Catherine Ann Linscoob who wrote an article for Christianity and Literature published in Southern California, giving about 90 different things that she thought Hooper did that were inappropriate, that were wrong, that he was a pretender and all that sort of thing. Well, I was doing my master's on Lewis. I did my master's thesis on Lewis. And I read the article by Hooper and I go, what is she saying? Even though I didn't know very much at the time, I knew 60-some of these accusations she made were utterly false. When I got to the interview with John Dart had that very journal with him. Linscoob had sent it to him in order to get him to interview Hooper and to castigate Hooper. I listened to this interview, and afterwards I about cold cocked John Dart, and I gave him a piece of my mind. I said, listen, you're accusing this man who's done so many things with Lewis's legacy. You don't know anything that you're talking about. I know some, and I know this article is false. Well, anyway, that solidified our friendship because I found myself constantly in Walter Hooper's corner whenever anything about this controversy would come up. And I started collecting material, and I started speaking out against it pretty soon just by association to Hooper. Linscoob started leveling her cannon at me as well. We went over to England on sabbatical in 1988 and lived there, and it wasn't unfrequent for Walter to come over for a hamburger. He liked hamburgers. And we would see him every week at the Lewis Society meetings, and sometimes we'd meet at the pub. And then, of course, when I did my doctorate over at the Oxford Center for Mission Studies, I was in Oxford at least three times a year for 6 weeks each time, and I would see him constantly then during those times. And again, the friendship developed and emerged. He'd been in our home here in Wheaton several times. And I was always grateful. I never tried to, I wouldn't always call him up and say, hey, can we get together or something like that. I was very guarded of his time. I saw him over and over and over again, giving of himself to people who had come through. And I respected the fact that he did that, and I didn't want to be a person who was taking up his time. But anyway, he was a guy who would celebrate other people and so on. But I remember one time I was speaking at the Oxford C.S. Lewis Society meeting, and Walter introduced me. And he gave all of these details about our first meeting in 1977. He talked about the conversation we had. These were things I had totally forgotten. And yet when he brought them up, I go, oh yeah, my word, I haven't thought about that for years. Oh yeah, I remember that. After the meeting was over, and I gave my paper and so on, I went to Walter. I said, Walter, how did you remember all of that stuff? He said to me, Jerry, I keep a journal, a meticulous journal, and I write it in every day. And when I knew I was going to interview you, I went back through the index and looked at all the times we've met, and I just read up all this stuff so I would be prepared. And I thought to myself, oh my heavens. In that preface to God in the Dock, the first words that Hooper writes in the preface are a quote from James Boswell about Samuel Johnson. And in fact, Walter Hooper was Lewis's Boswell. And we keep saying, how did Hooper remember all these things about Lewis the same way he remembered those things about me when he introduced me? And I was a nothing. He had just met me, but he wrote that stuff in his journal. Hooper meticulously kept notes of all of his meetings with Lewis, of all the things he learned about Lewis, and so on. And I think he felt that a duty, but I would suggest to you, it was a calling. And because of Walter Hooper's meticulousness, even God in the Dock, he says in that same preface, I wanted to read everything Lewis read. And so consequently, I started digging around to find articles and essays that were published in journals and so on, that these things would have been lost had somebody like him had not sleuthed out and pulled them out and put them under common cover in book after book after book, so that we have them available to us today. The world owes a great debt to Walter Hooper, because almost single-handedly, he preserved the legacy of C.S. Lewis and made available to all of us works that would have gone into obscurity and been lost had it not been for Hooper. So I rise up in some senses as one of his children to call him blessed on this day.
Reverend Will Voss, senior minister of a congregational church in Massachusetts, is the author of several Lewis books, including Mere Theology, A Guide to the Thought of C.S. Lewis.
I first was introduced to Walter Hooper through C.S. Lewis's stepson, Douglas Gresham. This was in 1996. I was planning a C.S. Lewis tour to England, and Douglas was helping me plan the details of that tour, and I wanted to have a number of people who knew C.S. Lewis speak to our group during our time in England, and so Walter Hooper was an obvious choice in addition to Douglas Gresham and George Sayer and another one of C.S. Lewis's colleagues, George Watson. And so Doug graciously sent a letter that I sent to him and sent it on to Walter, and I immediately had a response from Walter by return of post. I wish I still had that very graciously written letter from him. I went looking for it the other day. I couldn't find it. But we quickly reverted to communicating by email and making our plans for our first meeting, his meeting with our tour group, which happened in Oxford. And so it was partway through our tour, about halfway through our whole time together. And Walter spoke to our group from the Eastgate Hotel across the street from Magdalen College. And some of you may remember this as the location where C.S. Lewis and Joy Davidman first met face to face. We were in that very room. We had breakfast together as a group My wife Becky and I sat at a table with Doug Gresham on one side and Walter Hooper on the other. And of course, as Walter has done before many groups around the world, he regaled us with stories of his meeting C.S. Lewis, but he focused most of all in that first talk that I ever heard him give face to face. He talked most about Lewis's work, which at that time, and I would say still to this day, Walter is one of the most familiar with Lewis's work. You know, he's just the foremost expert on the writings of C.S. Lewis in the world. And I don't know if Walter could ever have a successor in that regard. So we had a wonderful first meeting with him. And then a few years later, in the summer of 2000, I was doing a Oxford summer school in religious studies, similar to the Oxford summer school program that Walter Hooper did in 1963. At the time, he was able to meet C.S. Lewis for the first time. And so during those 2 weeks I was in Oxford, I rang up Walter and asked if we could meet. And as it turned out, it happened to be on my birthday. And we had tea in his lovely flat on St. Bernard's Road in North Oxford. And that day I had picked up at Blackwell's a copy of the first volume of the collected letters of C.S. Lewis. And Walter very kindly signed it to me from his friend, Walter Hooper in Oxford. And that just shows the graciousness of the man. You know, I'm sure, William, you're going to be talking to many people who knew Walter Hooper much better than I did. I was simply a fan from afar. But that first time meeting in his flat, we talked for a couple of hours, not just about C.S. Lewis, but so many other topics, both personal and public. And I just really came to love the man, his graciousness, his wisdom, and his insight on so many topics. So from that day forward, every time I was in Oxford, I would try to spend some time with Walter. I know, William, you did as well in Walter's flat that he later moved to on the Woodstock Close, and such a lovely place. He enjoyed the fact that that apartment there had formerly belonged to the novelist Graham Greene, and a beautiful apartment it was, with so many photos of Lewis on the entry wall as you walk in, and of course all of Walter's beautiful book collection. He had many books that had formerly belonged to C.S. Lewis. And of course, he had an extensive collection of Lewis's letters. I think he had copies in his office of just about every one of the Lewis letters that were later published in the collected letters. And so most of my friendship with Walter was from afar and by email. I would often write to him when I had a question about Lewis that I thought only he could answer. And in 2008, I had a book published, a little biography on C.S. Lewis written for children called The Professor of Narnia. And Walter very graciously agreed to write the foreword to that book. And I was so thrilled with what he wrote. And his willingness to do that and the beauty and grace with which he wrote were just typical of the man in so many ways. And really, since hearing about his death on the 7th of December, I haven't stopped thinking about him and missing him and praying for him, as I hope he prays for all of us as well.
Sarah Waters from University of Buckingham.
The first time I met Walter Hooper was at the Oxford C.S. Lewis Society, which for many people in the UK at least will be where they first encountered him. But of course I knew his name from many books, and it's still strange to me to see books that are edited, that are by C.S. Lewis, but are edited by someone other than Walter Hooper. I guess I'm going to have to get used to that now, but I so associate him with C.S. Lewis, they're kind of synonymous in my mind. And for me, one of his huge legacies of what he's done with Lewis is really the way that he has drawn out huge numbers of academic pieces that weren't previously so well known or weren't collected neatly together. So Hooper did a huge amount of work of trawling through all kinds of different periodicals from the fairly explicit kind of adult content magazines where bizarrely things were published by Lewis to much more kind of literary review pieces that you might expect. And really, and what he did was he really compiled all of these different pieces together and drew some really fascinating connections. So for example, when you look at how he collected the literary essays in a series of different volumes, he looked at then connections that could be drawn between them. So sometimes he would group them chronologically, as you might expect, but then sometimes it was more thematically. And I think it allows Lewis scholars and Lewis fans to have a look at different connections that can be drawn between different aspects of Lewis's work. For me, I guess the most momentous piece of work that Hooper did in his entire kind of oeuvre of Lewis collecting and Lewis editing has to be the three volumes of letters, which are not quite all the letters, but pretty much. And he not only made them searchable with the huge indexes and the glosses on all kinds of different things, but what he did was kind of offer them up for people to read, but also for people to then springboard off and do all kinds of different research. So for me, the kind of research that I do just wouldn't be possible in so many ways without that amazing searchability. And it shows very much, I think, what Walter Hooper was setting out to do in his kind of humble approach. He was setting out to facilitate the legacy of Lewis moving forward. So the whole work of Lewis studies of working through different ideas that Lewis posits, different connections that he makes. Walter's footnotes that he includes all the way through allows us to springboard off those and think, ah, so he was referencing this, wait, that makes me think of this, and so on and so on. And we kind of are able to then take off of that and construct our own different narratives and our own analyses. And this is a kind of work that just simply wouldn't have been possible without the huge amount of effort and work that he put into editing all of these different volumes. And he would construct all these different stories as he told about his work across the years for the Lewis estate and for all the different kind of editorial processes that he worked through. Part of what he was doing was obviously, of course, trying to capture his friend and his friend who had so inspired him. And he was at heart a kind of fanboy, but in such a meticulous and detailed and editorial fashion that so transcends what we think of when we think of that phrase. And we see this in the way that he told stories about Lewis and very much in the way that he wrote as well. So just as a kind of example, anecdote of this, a couple of years ago at the C.S. Lewis Society Christmas party, which is held at the Kilns in December in Oxford each year, he brought along what people will probably know best as a lost chapter from Herodotus, which is not so well known, I guess, but it's where Lewis is commenting on the difference between Christmas and Xmas. And he brought along a Christmas card that Lewis had printed with this passage on it. And this is the kind of thing that, you know, he just happened to have around his house and just happened to think might be interesting to people, that willingness to share all of these different aspects of Lewis's character, both in what he wrote and what he compiled and in the stories he told. It is such an amazing legacy. And it's something that, because he so meticulously published, so much of that hasn't been lost. And so many of those stories live on in those who heard them and those who are yet to hear them.
Finally, Dr. Stephen Beebe, Professor Emeritus, Texas State University, author of C.S. Lewis and the Craft of Communication.
With Walter Hooper's passing, we have lost the preeminent C.S. Lewis scholar in the world. Walter's C.S. Lewis scholarship is simply unparalleled. those of us who are interested in C.S. Lewis know Lewis from his writing and from his speaking. But Walter knew C.S. Lewis. And for a short time in 1963, he lived with C.S. Lewis. Walter looked at and along C.S. Lewis. When I think of Walter's contribution as a scholar, the list is long. Anytime I'm beginning to look at a C.S. Lewis work, I first turn to Walter's magistral, which is the word often used to describe his C.S. Lewis companion and guide. 940 pages of detailed summaries, footnotes, stories, reviews. It is just invaluable as a resource for C.S. Lewis scholarship. If the only thing Walter had done was edit Lewis's collected letters, his multiple volumes of at least the three volumes of collected letters and other volumes of letters, that would have been enough. But we have more. I once introduced Walter to a group of students when he spoke at Texas State University. And as part of my introduction, I said, imagine a stack of books, book chapters, and articles as tall as I am. That gives you some idea of the prolific output of Walter Hooper. The headline is "We've Lost a Scholar." But for many of us, it's not just losing Walter Hooper as the Lewis scholar, but it's losing Walter Hooper as a friend. I've noticed recently the number of social media posts about Walter, and the three most mentioned words in these posts are he was kind, he was humble, and he was our friend. And then I rejoice in seeing the many photographs, and many of us want to post our images of ourselves with Walter. We want to connect with him because he connected with us. I first met Walter in 2002 at a C.S. Lewis Society meeting in Oxford, and following the meeting, he invited me to come to his home for tea, and I'd not met Lewis. I was just beginning my Lewis scholarship journey, and here was Walter Hooper inviting me to come visit him. I was thrilled, of course, and since that time, we've had an ongoing deepening relationship that has culminated in brotherly love, as we would meet each year and sometimes twice a year, exchange emails. He was an important friend to me. Walter is credited with transcribing the work of C.S. Lewis. Let me suggest that he did more than that. Walter transposed C.S. Lewis. One of C.S. Lewis's signature ideas was the concept of transposition. For Lewis, transposition is the process of going from richer or higher experiences and how we communicate those in a lower frame. How do we make the ineffable effable? Lewis talked about that and had some ideas on how we do that. Walter Hooper is credited with transcribing C.S. Lewis, with interpreting his villainous handwriting, as it's been called. But Walter did more than transcribe. I think what Walter Hooper did for us is he helped transpose C.S. Lewis. He helped make the richer clearer for us. It's as if Walter metaphorically gave Lewis a microphone and turned on the camera to let us hear and see Lewis with greater clarity. We have no videos or no films of C.S. Lewis, but Walter, through his stories and anecdotes, as well as his meticulous scholarship, helped us see Lewis. The headline is certainly the loss of Walter Hooper, the preeminent C.S. Lewis scholar in the world. But for those of us who knew Walter and loved Walter, we've lost a dear friend. He was one of the best listeners I ever knew. I always thought when I had tea with Walter that it was the closest I will ever get to what it must have been like to have tea with C.S. Lewis. Here was someone who was really interested in what you had to say and listened. We are thankful that Walter Hooper listened, that he transposed to make the richer, higher aspects of C.S. Lewis effable and clearer to all of us. Thank you, Walter Hooper.
As mentioned at the start, you can feel free to share your own reflections about Walter in the comment sections of this or any of the other shows. Of course, you can do this even if you've never met him and want to share what his work has meant to you. I'm William O'Flaherty, author of the misquotable C.S. Lewis, which was actually dedicated to Walter Hooper. You can hear my reflections of meeting him on the first show. There is a direct link in the show notes. Finally, thanks for listening to this tribute to Walter Hooper. Be sure to check the show notes for links to others found on the podcast, Pints with Jack, and the Lamppost Listener. You've been listening to All About Jack, a C.S. Lewis podcast, which is a feature of the website EssentialCSLewis.com. Again, I'm William O'Flaherty.